Welcome to the Spark Girls podcast, the self-publishing podcast for authors. You're in the right place for the best writing, marketing, and publishing advice, plus interviews with industry experts and best-selling authors. I'm Cheryl Phipps.
I'm Shah Barrett.
I'm Wendy Vella.
And I'm Trudy J. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
And this week we have an amazing guest with us. We have author Melissa Pearl. Say hello.
Hey, Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
Hello. Now, Melissa's another Kiwi, so you're all going to have to put up with Kiwi voices. Yes, obviously super special. I'm going to read a quick bio, and then we are going to get into the topic, which is actually starting a new pen name from scratch and kind of making it successful, basically, which is what Melissa has done, which is a really fun, exciting topic. So I'm super excited. So here we go. Bio, Melissa. Melissa Pearl writes young adult, sweet romance and sport romance books across 5 different pen names and has more than 80 books to her name. When she's not busy writing, she hangs out in New Zealand with her husband, 2 sons and their dogs Zippy and Moses. She loves reading and watching movies, spending time with her family and playing ridiculously long board games. Welcome.
Thank you.
I added in the ridiculously long.
Yes, you're giving away my inner nerd.
So let's start at the beginning, Melissa, and talk about how you got into self-publishing and where all this came from.
So about probably around the Twilight era is when I sort of started. I mean, I'd always liked writing. I'd written a few little novels myself, but then when Twilight came around, I just had my son and I was like, what am I going to do when he's napping? I'm so not one of those mums who's like, let's do the laundry and the dishes while my son's asleep. I was like, no, I want to do something for me. So I started writing and I wrote a trilogy and then I gave it to people and I rewrote it again because it had feedback. And so I kept rewriting it and learning the craft of writing as I was going. I was putting it out to agents and publishers and just getting rejected across the board. And my brother said to me, oh, there's this new author called Amanda Hocking and she's putting stuff up she's self-publishing her work and she's killing it. And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. And because I'd had such good feedback from like the students and stuff that, and my husband was a teacher and all his kids who'd read my books really loved them. And I was like, well, I've got something here. What can I do with it? So I studied self-publishing and to be honest, I didn't really study it. Like I kind of just did a little bit of research and slapped my books up. And I think my first month I made like $35, you know, like I just really didn't know anything, but I just kind of learned as I went along. So that was going okay. That was Melissa Pearl was my first pen name. And then I read an awesome book.
When was that? Sorry to interrupt you. When was it?
2011. I published Golden Blood.
Yeah.
And then I put Golden Blood free and I got a BookBub ad in like the middle of 2012 maybe or something like that. And that really helped that series take off. So it enabled me to kind of keep writing. And I was an at-home mum at the time, so it wasn't like there was any pressure that I was supposed to be earning money. It was just kind of something fun for me to do. But then once the kids started school, I started to feel that pressure of I need to kind of try and turn this into a career or I'm going to have to go back to teaching, which I really didn't want to do. So then I read a cool book called For Love or For Money by Susan K. Quinn. I don't even know if you can get that book anymore.
No, I think she's taken it off.
Yeah, it was revolutionary for me.
Yeah.
And that set me up with Jordan Ford. I learned how to research the market and see how to write for readers, like what readers were looking for and how to kind of really cater to what they want rather than just writing what you want, but also seeing, well, how can I market this in a way that will be appealing to readers? And that's when Jordan Ford started, and Jordan Ford just took off. Like, I don't even know, it felt very fluky. Like, Jordan Ford just did really well for me.
And it wasn't to clarify, Jordan Ford is another pen name.
As another pen name of mine. That's
my
YA
sports. Have one pen name.
Yeah. Well, the reason I did it was for branding, because I'd read that book and I was like, how do I, people say, oh, what do you write? And I was like, well, Melissa Pearl writes fantasy and she writes paranormal and she writes romantic suspense and she writes contemporary romance. Like, it was just like so hard to describe my pen name. So I decided to, with Jordan Ford, it was going to be YA sports romance with like an element of mystery and danger. Like, it was just easy to kind of sell it because it was so clear and all my branding matched and it had like the sporty vibe and the font was like the font they have on Letterman jackets. And, you know, like it was just very American sports kind of
on brand,
sort of on brand very much. So it was an easy sell. And it did really well. Like, honestly, it just, I don't know what I did. Like, it just
did
well.
That's what you did, right? That's what you did.
Well, I did that, but then I lost it all. Like, in about 2018, just everything just started to dip. And then after the pandemic, it's like, I went through a couple of years of just breaking even or earning nothing. Like, it just was really hard. And I got into quite a sort of dark kind of funk, mindset wise. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, is this it? Is this over? Am I going to have to go back to teaching now? But I love writing so much and I still have so many stories to tell. And what am I going to do? You know, and it was quite stressful and depressing and everything. And you get into this really stupid, oh, no one wants me and my books aren't good. And you're desperately trying to sort of figure out. And so that's partly why I started Melody Sweet, because it was like this desperate, how can I, you know, make this happen? But Melody Sweet never really took off. And then I started working with Maggie on Sophia Quinn. And Sophia Quinn's done really, really well. We branded it really well. Yep.
So. Sophia Quinn is one where you've written with another author, and it's a co-authored one that, that is, what's the genre for it?
It's very sweet, sweet romance. Like, our tagline is, it's like reading a Hallmark movie.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's very, like, it's like country, small town cowboys, city girls coming into the country and negotiating and falling in love with cowboys and negotiating life on a ranch and that kind of stuff.
And was Maggie someone you knew before you started that pen name, or was it?
I've worked a bit with Maggie just in like multi-author box sets and giveaways and stuff, because she writes YA as well, and she's awesome and she's gorgeous. And sometimes we'd message each other. And one day I was just, I'd been really hoping and praying for an opportunity to turn things around, because, like I said, I was in a very desperate place. And the universe heard me, I think, because I was messaging Maggie and I was complaining about how hard it was that my YA books were just tanking, and like, how do I get them back? How could they go from being in like the top 500 down on Amazon's ranking down to like 150, 200,000? You know, like, what's happened? Yeah. How do I get this back? And she was like, you know what? I just don't think they're just not, the market's not vibing there right now. And she's like, why don't we do a pen name in an area that's really doing great at the moment? And so we did that, and it's done really well for us.
Kudos to you. And also, can I just say, there'll be a lot of people listening to us that really appreciate your honesty on that, because so often, all of us, it's human nature, we want to hit the high points, right, in the career. We want to talk about the book bubs and the success and the sales. But very often, this is a really cyclical, really roller coaster ride. And so thank you for speaking to that, because it's hard, and it's very hard to pick yourself up when you're in that downward, you know, slump.
And I think that roller coaster actually continues until you hit a certain peak, and then you're away. But it can be very, very much so, you know.
Yeah, like, well, I think the hardest thing was, is I thought I'd hit my peak. I was like, sweet, this is it. You know, like, I finally made it. And then to lose it all with, like, I was like, I was doing everything I was supposed to do. Like, I was doing what I'd been taught and what I'd learned.
You're not the only one. You have
ticked all the boxes. Why isn't it working? And it's horrible. I feel like I almost hit a wall, and I actually stopped working for a month, which for me is huge. Like, I didn't write anything. I didn't do any. I just stopped all my ads, and I kind of went into shutdown mode.
Yeah.
Just for a month, because it's like, I think that's the closest thing I've ever come to like a work breakdown. The series that I thought was going to do so well, because the readers who had read it loved it, I just couldn't sell it. It just wasn't, I couldn't move it. And it was really,
The worst part to that is you did so well and then it dropped. And I think that's even worse.
I mean, honestly think I went through the stages of grief, of like, because I mean, I try and be really objective about work and talk about my books like a product and stuff sometimes, because if you call them your babies and then you get a bad review, suddenly it's like you take it really personally. It's like, well, it's just subjective. I mean, some readers like your stuff, some don't, doesn't matter. So it's easier to kind of be less emotional about it.
Yeah.
But then sometimes it just hits you in your
life. Sometimes you're just allowed to have a little moment. Did you find that with Sophia Quinn's success, that it lifted your other series? I mean, not everybody's going to know that you are all of these people, but
Well, I've kind of I've set up a publishing company called Forever Love Publishing. Mm-hmm. So if people go to foreverlovepublishing.com, all of my pen names are there.
Right.
So they can see that I write across genres. Mm. But see, my Sophia Quinn readers, there's no match up to like my Jordan Ford readers. They're a completely, right. you know, there's not, there yeah. might be a little bit of crossover, but not really. Yeah. Mm. So, which is a good thing that we've kept it a little bit separate, because obviously you don't want a whole bunch of YA readers like muddying up
your algorithms
on Amazon and stuff. You want to try and keep it quite clean so that you're getting the right readers, or Amazon knows who to advertise to. Yeah, who to promote stuff to.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit, so I'm just really interested particularly in the picking yourself up again thing, because I think a lot of us can really relate to that feeling, whether it's in publishing or other areas of life where you're just, you know, like you say, you've pulled the covers over your head for the month or so. So was it the co-writing that really got you to kind of lift up again, or was it seeing success with Sophia? What was it?
I think it is just a dogged determination not to give up on writing. I'm quite a spiritual person, so I pray and stuff. And I was just remember saying one day, I was like, am I supposed to let this go? Like, I feel like I was born to write. Are you sending me some kind of sign that this is it? And I just heard so clearly in my head, don't give up. And I've just clung to that. I'm like, I'm just going through a valley right now, and it's not going to be like this forever. And I can't give up. I just love it too much. And why would I keep getting story ideas in my head if I wasn't supposed to be doing this? Like, that's just cruel, right? So I kind of feel like I wouldn't keep getting these ideas and being spurred forward and excited and about writing a different story if I wasn't supposed to do it anymore.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense.
So that kind of got me out of the out from under the covers. But I still had that, I was still in that marketing sucks, I hate marketing, all I want to do is write, and that's the only thing I'm good at. And but, you know, what's the point of being good at writing if no one's going to buy my books and I can't, you know, so I was still very much in that yucky mindset. But Maggie's really helped me get onto a better mindset path. Like, she recommended a whole bunch of really awesome books to me. And it's amazing how when you start on a path like this, like mindset positivity, how you bump into other people who are into it too. Like, I was telling Trudy about it on one, we have lunch together once a month to talk about writing, but we talk about everything else. And I remember saying to her, oh, you know, I've just read this book by Renee Russo. And she's like, oh my gosh, I love this stuff. And we totally vibe on that all the time, don't we, Trudy? And she recommended Amanda Francis. So I've been reading that. And then I've been reading Jensen, I can never say her last name. She wrote that
Jensen
book.
Jensen Zero.
Yes, you are a badass.
Yeah.
And so I've started getting on that train. And like, Maggie was the one who kind of guided me into that thinking. So to work with someone like Maggie, who's really into positivity and just believing and deciding, she's like, you know, Sophia Quinn's going to do great. Like, that was the decision, and it just was going to be, you know, and it has been. It's been awesome, and she's so great to work with. And so it enabled me, when I started up my new pen name, which is going really, really well, to just say, you know what, this is going to be awesome. Like, I've just made the decision, and it's going to do great. And I mean, sure, I've done the work, and I've made a made wise decisions on how I've gone about it. But even just having that confidence to be like, this is going to do well, I've just decided. And so now I'm doing work on all of this backlist, like all these books that suddenly weren't selling anymore. I'm gonna start selling my backlist too. Like, I've just decided that my backlist, there are readers out there who have not read that stuff, and they're going to love it, and I'm going to find them this year. I've just decided. So I don't exactly know how that's all going to unfold yet, but it's going to happen.
Can I just, for anybody that's sitting here wondering or listening, it's Maggie Dallin, isn't it?
Yes, it's Maggie Dallin, who is amazing. She writes the sweetest, most gorgeous books, and she's the most amazing person to work with. So I feel very, very blessed to have her.
I'm sure she would say the same thing back at you.
So that's cool. So that was the kind of journey up to Sophia Quinn. And then you went, I know, the thing I need most in my life is another pen name. How am I gonna, like, can you talk about that? Because we I think we talked about it quite a bit before you did it.
Yeah.
And there was a reasoning behind it, like that you did it on purpose. So can you tell us why?
Yeah, so I'm reading all this book about positive mindset and how, you know, the desires of your heart have been placed there for a reason, which means that they're going to sort of unfold in your life and all that kind of thinking. And I was just reading the Off Campus series by Al Kennedy. And I love that. That's like some of my favorite type of stuff to read. Like, I love college sports romance books. I'm a jam. Like, I'll often reach for that before anything else. So I'm reading these books and I'm like, I love this stuff. Like, why aren't I writing this stuff? And I was like, well, because you don't write steamy books. You don't know how to do sex scenes. And I was like, yeah, but I really love reading this stuff. So why can't I write it? Why can't I write steamy stuff? And I was like, oh, because, you know, all your sweet readers, they're not going to be into it. And it's like, yeah, but there's plenty of other readers out there. So why not? And I just got hit with this storyline that I could not let go. Like, these characters just dove right into my soul and they were just like, we're staying, by the way. So, you know, you're going to need to do something with us.
Deal with it.
And, yeah. And look, honestly, within the day, I had the first book written in my head. Within the week, I had a 4-book series done. And within 2 weeks, I'd designed an entire world. So I've got like 16 books already that are just waiting, you know. And I was just like, this is for a reason. Like, there's no way I'd be feeling so passionate about this story if it wasn't meant to be. And I was like, you can't write it under Jordan Ford, because Jordan Ford is your YA. So I've done a little bit of NA with Jordan Ford, but it's sweet. And I was like, if I'm going to make a really good go of this, I need to make it steamy and I need to get over my fear of writing sex scenes. So I thought, you know what, I'll do a pen name and I'm going to do it really well, and I'm going to take all the stuff I've learned over my last 10 years of publishing, 11 years of publishing, and I'm going to just apply it the best way I possibly can. And that's sort of what I've done. I've just tried to take everything that I know works and just do that really well. Yeah.
Fantastic. And that's thus Katie Archer was born.
Katie Archer was born. Even finding the pen name was fun. I want a pen name that sounds really sporty and fun. And, you know, so I did the whole researching and I think I came up with about 15 different ideas, but I settled on Katie Archer. And then I Googled Katie Archer to make sure that there's no other authors called Katie Archer and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, Katie's my girl.
And it's really interesting because you've had so many pen names. Maybe it's something that you, because I used to think I could just slam any old name just on the cover and it won't really matter, but actually Katie Archer is, you know, like, it is a very sporty sounding name.
Yeah.
Like, it does fit the genre to me.
Absolutely.
Even Melody Sweet, you know, like you kind of quite
same,
you know,
with Sophia Quinn was like, I was like, Sophia Quinn, I was like, we need something soft and kind of
gentle,
girl, gentle, you know. And the Quinn is very, you know, it's got a very country kind of sound to me. And the Sophia is very gentle. The name's gentle because we were writing very sweet, clean stuff. Whereas Katie Archer's got more of a punch to it.
Yes.
And then just doing the branding and everything's been fun. And I came up with a fun line called Love is a Game Changer, because I was trying to sort of bring in the sport.
Nice.
You know.
Go you.
And it's been fun building the website. Like, every part of it's just been so fun. And I think, and it's been fun to kind of go, well, who is Katie? What's her persona? And so, like, with my newsletters, I'm just totally using all the things about myself that I just really love. Like, I'm just making silly statements and I'm making up words and I'm putting in lots of GIFs, and it's just fun. Like, it's just fun to kind of do it all with abandon, you know, and not be so sort of, I think, with Jordan Ford, I love Jordan Ford, by the way, but there was that sense of slight desperation, like, oh my gosh, this has to work or I'm screwed. Whereas with Katie Archer, because Sophia Quinn's doing well, it was kind of, I heard this really cool podcast the other day and the guy I was talking with, he's like, do things with or without you energy. It's like, this is happening. If you want to be part of it, come along and join in, but it's happening either way. And it's such a different kind of energy to approach something with. And so with Katie Archer, it was like, these books are happening. If you don't want to be a part of it, you are missing out, but that's not my problem because this is happening.
Lovely.
And so everything about it's got this very much with or without you energy. And I just, I can feel it as I'm talking. I can see myself using my hands a lot and getting all excited. But yeah, it just has got, it's got such a cool energy, this pen name. And I love, right, I love, and my newsletter is growing. Like I'm getting like 10 new subscribers a day, which I've never sort of had before. Like those numbers for me are huge. Like being able to check my dashboard each day and seeing I'm making a profit each day, having gone from making a loss most days or breaking even to suddenly checking my dashboard and go, oh my gosh, I made money today. This is so exciting.
So it's love that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So so let's go back to the, so you've got the name and you've got the storyline and you probably wrote the book in 5 minutes. Not to sound too, you know, like bitter or anything, but you know. but so, and you wrote the book kind of all right, it's fine, I'm not bitter, it's okay. And you wrote the book actually knowing sports romance, knowing the genre really well, and having a really strong sense of who Katie Archer was and who the brand was.
Yeah.
So those are all things that were in place. So we'll take that
I do think it's really important to research your genre before you write in anything. Like I'm not saying that you've got to rewrite your book and make it all rigid to fit this genre. In fact, one of my reviews, the early reviews that came through was like, this is like no other hockey romance I've ever read. And I was like, oh, no, is that like a bad sign? But then I decided, no, that's really cool because she loved it. And it meant that she was kind of looking for something within the hockey romance that was just a little bit different, you know, and that I was able to provide that for her. So, but I do, like, I've read lots of hockey romance and I kind of got a really good feel for the types of language that the authors were using, the way the characters spoke, what the readers were kind of loving about these characters, like found families, huge guys who are like dude and bro and all that kind of stuff. And like that whole protective guy, let's look after the girl, you know, all that kind of stuff that I love about hockey romance is what I've been able to put into, or sports romance. I'm kind of selling it as college sports romance because I don't want to just write hockey. It's just that hockey's really hot right now. So I was like, well, I'll start with hockey, but then I've also got like a football series and a basketball series that I want to write as well, but all within the same world. So you'll still see some of the hockey bros in the background and stuff like that, which readers really love.
That's cool.
Love it.
So then you've written the book. So what did you do next? Like, what are some of the things that you've learned over time that you were like, right, I'm going to make sure this happens for me?
Yeah. I think one of the decisions I made, and I'm really grateful I made it, is I had the confidence to delay my release because I think I finished writing the book in like September and I thought, no, you know what, I'm not going to release it now and try and I'm not going to release it in a few months when I'm battling like, you know, Christmas traffic. I'm going to wait and I'm going to release it in February. So I put it up for pre-order in October. And some of the other things I did, which I'd never done before, and I highly recommend doing it, was I watched Skye Warren had, I did take her course actually, which was really good. I don't think it's available anymore, but she talked about doing cover tests using Facebook ads to do cover tests.
Yeah.
So I asked my cover designer, I said, look, I'll pay you extra if you want me to, but I want 5 covers. I want a male, I want just a female, I want a couple. Oh no, it must have been 4 covers. And I want an object cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to test these on Facebook. And so I spent, and see, I was willing to spend some money to find out this information. That was another mind shift, as I always used to be. I got, because I'd lost, because with Jordan Ford, I think I got really high up in the ranking. I was earning bank, only spending like $40 a day on Facebook ads. Like I kind of felt like I just kind of hit a little pot of gold and then everything changed and suddenly Facebook ads were costing heaps. And then I got afraid to spend money. And so, but with Katie, I was like, I have got a budget of $5,000 American that I am willing to invest to get Katie off the ground. And like, I've already made that back in the first month. Like it just, so I was willing to spend money to do cover tests. And then I did a blurb test. I wrote an initial blurb. Then I sent it to Maggie and also sent it to Trudy. And then we worked on it together. And then I ended up having 5 different blurbs. Some of them were almost exactly the same, just a couple of words tweaked here and there. So once I had my cover, I then did a blurb test. So I kind of felt really confident putting it up on Amazon and Draft to Digital and all the places I published it because I'd already tested and I'd seen through Facebook clicks and likes and everything which blurbs and covers were connecting with the readers.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So just to clarify, for so you're sending those people that clicked on the ads to the pre-order. That's how you're testing
And what did
it.
I do? I don't think I had my pre-order up yet. So I must have just sent them to a website page. I just set up a website page and said, look, mm-hmm. if you're interested in this, you can download a 4-chapter sampler. I think I put the first 4 chapters up.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be the first person to find out when this releases.
Oh, lovely.
And, you know, kind of that whole waiting list feel. People love mm-hmm. that. They like to feel like they're part of something that's new and exciting. And I was on the wait list, you know, that kind of thing. So
they put their email.
Set up a web page with a, I set up a newsletter.
Newsletter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Because you don't have to newsletter, you could send it to them to a Goodreads page or something. Yeah. But because I was testing the cover and I was testing the blurb, I think I just had made up like a kissy image with the title, and as my image, and then the newsletter sign up, and then once I had the actual cover, which ironically was actually the image that my kissy image was the one that won. Which is pretty cool.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it was really cool because I thought people might be into object covers or the bare-chested man, but no, they liked the kissy image, which is cool because that was my favourite too.
Yeah. Was it a clear winner or was it
it was a kind of a tie with the bare-chested guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran a second set of tests using those two, and but then the kissy image kind of nudged ahead in the end. Object cover did okay too, but I used the object cover to. Oh, that's another thing I did, which I hadn't a plan to do originally, is I decided to write a little prequel novella, which I put online for free in October. So it meant people could, it's called the Hockey House V-Cards, and it's basically 4 10,000 word stories within the one book. And it's just how about each of the guys at Hockey House lost their virginity. So they're sitting around a table chatting, drinking beers, and then they start telling their V-card stories, and it just goes back in time and does a flashback of how each other, but it also shows readers a little bit about who the characters are. Mm-hmm. So the readers are like, oh, I can't wait for Casey's story, which is like book three. Right. Or I loved, you know, Liam was my favorite. I can't wait for his story. So that kind of got that kind of energy going around the series, which
that's
is really cool.
Such a cool idea. I love that idea of having that cast almost as a teaser, you know.
And that really helps. So that, and then they could get a 4-chapter sampler of the first book, because the first 4 chapters for The Forbidden Freshman are really hilariously funny and engaging, and you get to see the character dynamics really, really fast. And people fell in love with Michaela and Ethan quite quickly because they just tease each other the whole time, and there's all this banter, and yeah, it's quite fun. So that really got readers into it, which was cool.
Lovely. And did you have that on the website with the four guys talking, or was that a download? Did you have it as set up?
That was a download, because it ended up being a 40,000 word.
Oh, right.
You know, because it was 10,000. I wanted to make it long enough that if I want to, I could get a BookBub ad. Because I think a BookBub ad, the minimum word count's like 40, is it 40,000 or something? Mm-hmm. I researched it and went, if I ever want to do a BookBub ad, I want this to be just longer than novella. So that I could do, but I haven't actually done that yet, because I managed to get it onto that Stuff Your Kindle and got heaps of downloads for that, which was really great timing. That was in December, so that really helped boost my pre-orders for The Forbidden Freshman. And I think I want to save up a BookBub for Forbidden Freshman and try and get a 99-cent deal on Forbidden Freshman, but I'm going to wait until after the fourth book comes out now, I've decided, because I don't have any releases in June. So it's like, well, I could do a book club in June, so that'll give me another little boost.
So The Forbidden Freshman is book one.
Yeah. And that was the other reason for my delay. So I thought, I'm not going to just release this as soon as it's available. I'm going to wait, because I want to try rapid fire release for the first series, because I do think that really helps with momentum, especially if it's a brand new pen name and you're really trying to get off the ground. So I wanted to allow myself enough time to be able to basically finish 3/4 of the series before I published book one. So it meant by the time book one was going live, I already had book two up for pre-order and it was done. It was ready to go. And then book three, I was just in my final editing stages. I'm currently writing book four, and that's coming out in May. So it's just given me lots of time. Like there's not that stress of, oh shit, I've got to pre-order and I've got to get this done. And I want time. I want to be able to send it to my editor. And if she's got big changes, I want time to be able to change those. And you know, I don't want to feel that panic rush.
How big are the books?
Melissa? The first book's quite the longest I've ever written. That's 100K.
But, wow. It's a chunky monkey.
Yeah, nice. It is.
Hockey romance,
But the others are all around the 85K, which is normal for, that's about normal length for me.
Yeah. And are you publishing wide or are you Amazon?
I did, which is new for me because I've always been a KU girl. But as I was going into this, like I said, I was trying to look at it, well, going into it with confidence that this was going to do great. And all the authors that I've kind of seen that are doing really well, like millionaire authors, self-published authors who are making bank, none of them are in KU. A lot of them are wide. There are some authors in KU who are doing really well. You know, I'm not saying one's better than the other.
Yeah.
From just what I'd observed, I wanted the independence of wide. And that's scary when you're only doing KU. And,
absolutely.
And I have had moments of, oh, have I made like the biggest mistake?
Yeah.
Because 100K words in KU, that would actually bring in a pretty good income, you know? But I just decided, I just felt in my gut, it's like, be brave, go wide, just do it. And it's also given me the opportunity to set up direct sales. Yes. So, and I mean, I don't get heaps of direct sales, but I probably get about 2 or 3 direct sales a day, you know, and that's brought in, I think last month it brought in about $300 or $400 for me.
Hey, that's, nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I mean, there's your advertising budget, right, for the month.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And Maggie actually said to me, she said, you know, since going to do direct sales, she said, I'm actually finding that my sales on Amazon have gone way up since starting up direct sales. So people are obviously seeing her ads and going, oh, this looks cool, clicking on the link and seeing it's Shopify and going, no, I'll just get it off Amazon. So they're going to Amazon and searching her, buying her books on Amazon. So her Amazon sales have like doubled through doing direct sales. So, and it's great because like my direct sales, I'm like save 30% and it takes them to my website where they can either buy the book for like $4.99 or they can buy it for $6.99 on Amazon. And it's amazing how many people are like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna buy it off Amazon for $6.99. I'm like, okay.
I think a lot of the time we have these sort of scripts in our head that authors won't that readers won't spend that or whatever. I mean, look, we go into Starbucks, right? And without thinking, we choose between the Tall and the Grande or whatever the heck comes next. And it's a drink that we're spending the same amount of money on in a book.
Yeah. Yep.
But that's just so impressive. And I think, again, that speaks to your attitude going into this pen name for Katie Archer was just let's try, you know, try it. Unshackle yourself from the
100%.
Don't hold yourself small. Go big.
I think that's what I was always doing as well with like all my other pen names. It's like, oh, are we just going to buy it if I charge that much? It's like, you know. And I thought, no, screw it. Like these books are worth it. And so I just decided to go in higher than it. So my like the next in series, it's $6.99 for the sale week in pre-order, but then I've just put it up to $7.99 and sales are still coming in. I mean, I think that whole price thing is more of an author issue than a reader issue.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's our problem and we need to shift our mindset.
Because we're self-published, so therefore it's worth less than
anything else. And my husband was saying, you know, by pricing it higher, you're really sort of saying this is a quality book.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah, you're right, you know. So I'm actually going to be putting up my prices across the board on all my pen names, but I decided to start high with Katie because the expectations are really high. Like I think one mistake I've made with some of my other pen names is I've done sales just too often. And so people are like, oh, she'll give it away for free eventually. I'll just wait.
Yeah, right, sure.
But with Katie, I'm going to be very selective about when I do sales and that kind of thing. And like another trap that I get caught in, and I still have to fight this a little bit, is checking your ranking. Like checking your Amazon ranking. I'm really good at doing that. Checking my Amazon ranking and then attaching emotion to it and going, oh, it's gone down, you know. But this time, because it's wide, it's like, well, the ranking doesn't mean as much.
No.
And then
And I mean, sure, my other platforms aren't selling as much, but that's still bringing in income. And then also the ranking, what does the ranking really mean? You know what I mean? Like if you've got a 40,000 or a 50,000 K book on KU and you haven't read through KU, I don't know how much that is financially, but having a $6.99 or a $7.99 book sell, it might not boost your ranking up, but you've made twice as much as if you'd had two books borrowed on KU or whatever it is. Yeah. Like I don't know the actual math, but
yeah.
I just, and so even though I watch my ranking a little bit, I'm not getting that same sense of, it's gone lower. So, or I always say lower for the bigger numbers and everyone's a bit different how they, but you know, it's not, and feeling that, oh, it's not doing so well, but it's like, no, just stop looking at that and just, you know, just be confident that the book is doing well. Look at your sales dashboard and go, ooh, I sold how many books today? And I'm trying to celebrate each sale because when you write fast, I don't know, Wendy and Cheryl, if you feel this way, when you write fast and publish quickly, it's really easy to go, just publish another one, move on.
Yeah.
And I'm trying really hard to go, no, you published a book. Let's be excited about that, you know.
Yeah. I didn't publish that fast, but, it's easy to just move on to the next book.
It is because you've got the next book lined up and kind of ready to go.
Well, you've forgotten about that one by the time
it's published. By the time it's published, it's like, I'm over you. I'm onto this one now.
Especially when you're doing pre-orders because you've now got another goal. And so
I'm trying to stop and smell the roses, so to speak.
I published one last Saturday and I just thought,
congratulations. Yay. I'm journaling a lot now. And I listened to Heather, I listened to your podcast the other day when I was walking the Heather Hildenbrand one?
Yes.
Yeah, that was so good, by the way. Yeah. Awesome job. And she was talking about, like, noting evidence each day, so, like, making a statement. And so this week I've been doing that. I think it was, like, money loves me and flows easily to me, and the evidence of this is. And so each day I'm writing down the evidence, and it's amazing how you can find the evidence. I think my two were money loves me and flows easily, and new readers are finding me every day. And so, and when you start to become aware of what your evidence is, it's like, crap, this is amazing. Like, it's a good confidence booster.
That's awesome. Okay, so let's. I'm taking you back a step because we've gotten further ahead than I meant to. So what other things did you do? So you tested the cover, the blurb, when you put the book up. What, you were collecting the email addresses, so you had a ready-made list of people who were excited about it when you so how many people did you have on that newsletter? What have you done with your newsletter?
Well, my goals, I had different goals, so I decided that I wanted to have 500 pre-orders by the time the book released. I wanted to have 1,000 newsletter subscribers because I knew that, I was like, what moves the needle the most, what is the most impactful? And I decided that newsletter does, like, newsletter is really good. And I decided that Facebook ads and Instagram were working well for me. So I decided that those would be my focus because I've fallen into that trap before where I want to try and do everything. Mm. And so I like put, and you spread yourself too thin that way. So it's like you do everything okay, or you can do a few things really well. And so I decided I was going to do my newsletter really well, and I was going to do so to the point that this was quite a lot of work, but I think it was worth it. So I have about 8 entry points into my newsletter. So you can sign up on my website and get a 4-chapter sampler for the Forbidden Freshman, or you can sign up in the back of my free prequel novella, or you can sign up in the back of the Forbidden Freshman and get a bonus epilogue that I'd written. It was in the release, it was available for release week, and then after release week I took it out and made it a newsletter sign up. You can also sign up in the back of the second book to get a teaser for the third book. And I think I've got one other area you can sign up, but so heaps of work, right? Because that's like four or five automated sequences. Yeah. But I was like, I want to pull readers in and keep them with me and have them there. I also have signups every time someone purchases a book direct sale, they sign up for my Katie Archer store. So like when the third book came up for direct sale and pre-order, I emailed them and said, by the way, the book's up. And I think I had like 12 sales, direct sales that day. And I was like, well, that's cool. You know, like there's only 110 people on that list or whatever. So to have
that's great.
Sales in one day. I was like, wow, that's awesome. You guys are amazing. Thank you. Mm. You know, so I put in a lot of effort for my newsletter. And at the time when I was making yet another automated sequence, I was like, why am I doing this? But I'm getting signups all the time. Like, I'm getting people signing up. So it's like, that's why you're doing it, Melissa. Like, that's why you put the work in, because that's set up now and I don't have to do that again. Like, that's just running away on its own. And each morning I check my numbers and I'm like, ooh, you know, this is cool. So, so newsletter was important to me. I'm still getting my head around Facebook ads, to be honest. Like, they're going well. Like, I'm getting good cents per click, and I'm doing video ads, which I'd never done before. They're doing really well. But it's hard to know, like, what's actually converting, because I think if I stopped the ads, my sales would go down. But I sometimes don't know if all those clicks I got today actually led to a sale. You know, like, it's really hard. I know that you can use, like, attribution tags and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know how accurate those actually are. And I think sometimes people do see the ad on Facebook and go, oh, that sounds like a good book, I'll look it up on Amazon. So they're not, or they might have clicked on it to read the blurry thing and go, oh, yeah, I like that. But I don't, you know, I'll go and look that up myself. So I think running Facebook ads is 100% worth it, but I would love to be able to understand Facebook ads more so that I can use them better. Yeah. So that's an area of growth for me that I'm still working on. It is. And then sometimes, like, I had my assistant does TikTok for me. I don't touch the TikTok. She just takes my Insta reels that I've made and she puts them on TikTok. And one of them did quite well the other day, she told me. And I think some of the sales I got that day might have come from that TikTok, but I don't really know. That's the thing. It's so hard to know. It's like,
you don't know where, unless you're doing one thing at a time.
Exactly.
It's really hard to know. But
like, you don't want to do one thing at a time.
No, you can't.
Because you want to put yourself out there, you know?
So you can't know where your sales are coming from. You just have to embrace it and go, yay, sales are going
exactly.
well. Otherwise, you go crazy. Yeah.
I do think with a newsletter, especially around a new release, though, I do think it's easy to go, well, I'm pretty sure that out of the 50 people who clicked this link in this email, I'm pretty sure a chunk of them would have bought the book. So I can attribute the 25 sales that I got today, probably 15 of those were the newsletter or whatever, you know. Like, so I do think, I do think newsletter is good.
Absolutely. I always get a real bump.
Said that your newsletter is growing. So how many people have you got in that?
I think I'm on 1,200 now. So I didn't quite get to 1,000 before Forbidden Freshman release, but I got to like 850 or something. So I was still really happy with that. And I got to 531 pre-orders. So I was stoked with that too.
That's a good percentage, isn't it?
That's on really a brand new pen name that no one knows.
I know. Like, that's awesome. And I mean, there's more I could still be doing. Like, I tried to get some newsletter swaps and I think I got three, considering I'm like a no-name Nancy in that genre. I managed to get a couple of larger pen names promoted me in their newsletter, and that definitely gave me a bump on the pre-orders. So I need to try and do that more. But I think I'll get my assistant to help with that, because it's just so time-consuming emailing authors. Yeah. And, you know, but I've kind of done that thing where, like, if they've promoted me in their newsletter, then the next week I will do a giveaway and I'll give away one of their paperbacks to my newsletter readers as a way to kind of promote them and sort of shine a little bit of a light on what they're doing.
Yeah.
So that's been nice to do that. So hopefully I can do that more, and maybe as Katie Archer gets a bit more mana, how do you describe mana to people? A bit more
acknowledgement or kudos
or whatever, then people might be more willing to go, oh, yeah, she's a bigger pen name, she's successful, I don't mind sharing her in my, you know, sharing her stuff in my newsletter.
Most authors are pretty good though, right?
Yeah, they are, right? Yeah. Mm. And on another exciting thing that happened is I got approached by, oh, am I allowed to say this? I think I am. An audiobook company.
Nice.
So that's kind of fallen into place for me. So I don't know if I'm allowed to say yet. So I just will just say that something in the works is there too, because I really wanted to see Katie Archer available in many different formats. And financially, doing it on your own for an audiobook is super expensive. And I didn't have the moolah for that at the moment. I will eventually, but right now I don't. So it's really cool to have that opportunity presented to me. And also an Italian publisher approached me too, because I'm like, well, why not? You know, like, why not get my books out there in Italian too?
That's
we'll see what happens.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah.
So was there anything else you did in terms of the lead up to the launch date?
I started again, you know how I said I had that $5,000 budget that I was willing to invest. I started messing around with Facebook ads. I think I started at like $5 a day, just advertising the pre-order. But in the past I've always been like, oh, it's such a waste of money advertising for a pre-order, it never works. But I actually found that it was working. Like, I think the ads were leading to pre-orders. So I initially advertised my free prequel, and then I decided it was going okay, but then I just sort of thought, why not advertise the pre-order? It's such a fun story, and I think people will be into it. And if they don't want to get the pre-order, they could at least sign up for your newsletter and get those 4 free chapters, and then they might pre-order at the end of that because they liked the free chapters. So I was running a $5 a day to the pre-order, and I was running $5 a day to the newsletter sign up. And I started doing video ads, and I just did little teasers from the story. So like just a little, like a TikTok, like kind of like a TikTok reel or an Insta reel. And they're doing really well. I think readers love to kind of get that little snapshot of the book. Mm. And I used AI to create images. So it's like images of the characters. So I just use an app thing off my phone. I'd be like, you know, tall college man standing next to a short college woman with a messy bun and brown hair, and they're standing here and they're doing this. And it just, you know, I've just created all of these images. And then you put the teaser around that, and it's kind of like, I think people feel like they're seeing a little part of the story somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're creating that story and they want to leap into it.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's going really, and I've just kept those ads going and I keep tweaking them. And then I think with Facebook ads, one thing I think is what I'm doing is right, is that you set it up and you just let it kind of churn over for a week or two. And then you add just one new ad to that ad set, and it just kind of gives it like a new little bit of life. And so sort of once a week, I'll just go in and I'll add one of the Insta reels that I've made into my ad set. And it just kind of gives the ad set a little bit of a burst or something. And I feel like, because I guess if readers are seeing, if the same people on Facebook are seeing it, but they're seeing a slightly different teaser, well, that teaser might appeal to them more than the other one did. And so suddenly they're like, oh, well, actually, maybe I do want to read this book now. Or, you know, or they're not even conscious that they've seen that book advertised already, but it's a new teaser and their subconscious has that, you know, there's bound to be some deep seated psychology around that, I'm sure. But, you know.
So do you shut off any ads when you add the new one, or you just get increasingly more and more ads?
Yeah, I just put more and more ads in there. I mean, Facebook decides what's going to work and what isn't. Like, if I look over like a month's worth of ads, say if I've got 10 ads in an ad set, then it might have like a couple of the ads will have like 1,000 or more clicks, and then some of them will have like 3 clicks or no clicks. So obviously Facebook decided that wasn't converting very well, so they just stopped showing it to people. So it's like Facebook does the work for you and you don't have to make those decisions. And I think I used to try and be too involved. Like when I was doing Facebook ad years ago, I would decide what needs turning off and on and stuff. And after doing that Sky Warren course, I've just realized that actually Facebook knows what they're doing. And I've kind of left
more
it up
so
to
now too.
And it doesn't sound like it's changed.
AI has made it bigger.
He was saying that
true,
that the AI within Facebook has kind of amped it up now, and
cool.
You can just let it go and do its own thing much more than you used to
you
be
don't
able
have to tweak.
So
yeah,
and if you tweak it doesn't affect it as much, you know.
Yeah. I think I would love to just leave Facebook alone and just let it do its thing and just churn over each day. But I do notice that if I leave it for more than a week or so, I feel like I feel like it's got the potential to go stagnant. So just adding like one little new ad, you know, and all you've got to do is like duplicate an ad and then change the video and change the text, and then it's done. Like everything else is set up. So it honestly takes like 2 minutes. But it's just enough to, because I just noticed the one that I put up yesterday, so I added a new teaser yesterday, and admittedly I don't think I've added a new one for a couple of weeks, and it's getting like 3 cents, 4 cents a click, and getting like really good conversion. Wow. Heaps of likes just in 24 hours. I'm like, oh, so see, I didn't even know that that was a teaser that I didn't think was actually that good. But they've gone for it.
Who knows?
You don't. That's the thing. I mean, so it's worth, that's why I did the cover test and why I did the blurb test. Like, I honestly thought with the cover test, I thought the bare-chested guy was going to win by a country mile.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. They wanted the kissy one. And it's great because the kissy one's way more emotive, I think. Although the one bummer about that is I can't use it for my Facebook ads. So I can't put the cover on my ads. But my cover designer sent me just like a little logo of just the text of the title.
Yeah.
And I just put that in the corner and that seems to be enough.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. So there's ways around it. Yeah.
Sorry. Do you do Amazon ads as well,
Melissa? I have lost a lot of money through Facebook ads. So I've avoided it on Amazon ads, not Facebook, sorry, Amazon. I used to use them a lot, especially when my books were in Kindle Unlimited. So I actually do have Amazon ads running. I've got one going to our Sophia Quinn box set, and that is doing so well. Like, that's just found its little home and it's doing great. And it's because of the page reads, right? So we've got a 7 books box set. Mm-hmm. And so the page reads on that are really high. So it gets us a really, really good return. So I think I spend about $20 a day and it's making about $45 a day, you know, in page reads. So it's 100% worth having that churning over.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've also given a lot of my money to Amazon ads. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, with Katie, because it's not in KU, because it's wide, I'm just going to play that one a bit more cautiously. And I thought, I'm just going to give my money to Facebook to start with. Mm-hmm. I'm very tempted because there's so many great pen names, right? So many great authors on Amazon that I could target specifically. But also a lot of those authors are in KU. So there's a high chance that people would click on my book, which would cost me money. And then they go, it's on KU and all that.
Yeah.
So, and I'm also finding that I'm not even going directly to Amazon with my Facebook ads, even though Amazon's my biggest seller. I send them to my website, you know, I think that way they can choose to direct sale or they can choose to click the Amazon button and buy it that way. But because they say that, you know, if you send them to your website, you lose 30% of your clicks because for every extra click a person has to make, you lose them. But I was like, but my website's so pretty. And I think that I can put in all my quotes and I can make it look way more appealing. I don't know if that keeps my cost per click down. I did do a test. I did during release week, I ran one set of ads directly to Amazon and one set directly to my website just to see if there was any comparison of price and all that kind of stuff. And I personally didn't see any huge shifts. So I was like, well, I might as well just keep going back to my website. So I send them to my website and then I might get some direct sales out of it.
Yeah.
And then I get their email information and I have a direct line to these people.
So are you sending, so all of your Facebook ads are sent to a website page. Is there a button to go to Amazon if they want to?
Yes.
And then a button to direct sale and
So at the top, I'm guessing most of them go to mobile, right? Because that seems to be. So at the top of the page, there's like buy direct, save 30%, start reading right now. And then if they scan down underneath that, it says, or you can buy from your favorite bookstore. And I think I've just got like the 5 main ones. I've got Amazon and Apple and Nook, Kobo and Google. And so they could click on one of those. And then underneath that, I've got the blurb for the book and then I've got some quotes. And then at the very end of that, I've got buy now, which would send them to my direct sales page
Cool.
So, and it also means when I'm doing that's another thing I did. When I set up the pre-order, I also set up the direct sale. So it's like you could pre-order now or you could buy it now, save 30% and start reading it today. So that's another thing that's been quite good. So I've gotten some good, you know, direct sales that way. And another thing I've done is at the end of every book, there's a chapter written from the perspective of the main guy from the next book. Ooh. And it's a bit of a cliffy. So like you've got, you finish up your story with a couple, and then the last chapter of The Forbidden Freshman is a story from Liam, and he opens the door to this woman who's obviously clearly upset. And that's how the story finishes. And the girl is the best friend of the FMC from The Forbidden Freshman. So readers are like, oh my gosh, Liam and Rachel, oh my gosh, I have to read it. And then the ending of the second book, the chapter is from Casey, who's the third book, and it's got quite, I won't say what it is, but it's quite a shocking revelation at the end of that chapter. So people are like, oh my gosh, I have to read that now. So brilliant. I think that's quite helpful.
It's a way of having a cliffhanger without upsetting the people.
Well, that's the thing.
Because I've already had the story.
Exactly. Yeah. You get your happily ever after, but then you get a cliffy for the next book. And I think that works quite well. I've done that a bit with my Jordan Ford stuff as well, and it's always served me really well.
So with the next book, do you repeat, but do you use that same, or do you start it in a different way?
I have, so I've started it slightly differently, but I've repeated that scene, but I've done it from the girl's point of view.
Nice.
So they're still seeing the same scene, but they get inside someone else's head. So it's like reading a different scene.
Which is also, I think, important because you don't want them to think I've already read this book if they're looking at the look inside. So you want to.
And actually for the third book, I went back in time and I was like 6 weeks earlier and I showed a part of the story that was quite important, and then I brought the readers forward to the present. So that's what I did with the third book, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how do you manage all your different pen names now then, Melissa? Are you actively working on all of them, or are you focusing purely on Katie and Sophia?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think this is an area that I'm struggling with a little bit, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. I do not have enough heads or hands to cope with it all. So I'm really having to let some stuff go, which makes me sad, but I'm only one person.
Yeah.
So I do have my assistant who is amazing. So she posts on my social media for Melissa Pearl and Jordan Ford and mm-hmm. does some Katie Archer stuff for me as well. So she's doing that for me. And then Maggie does our social media for Sophia Quinn, which is great. I do the Amazon ads. She does Facebook ads and social media. I do the newsletter. So we try and sort of divide it up that way. So I still do a newsletter for all of them, which isn't too hard. But I've had to drop. So for Katie Archer, I send out an email a week. But for all my other pen names now, I've dropped it down to once per month because it's just too much. So if I was having to write five emails every Friday, So I've dropped those down to once a month. And with Jordan, I would love to write some new stuff. I've got some books for Jordan Ford that I really want to write, but Katie's doing so well and I want to, and Sophia's doing well. So that's kind of where I should be putting my energy. That's a bit of a no brainer. So I don't know how I'm going to find the time to do some more of my Jordan Ford stuff. And to be honest, my last two Jordan Ford series did just not, they just didn't move the needle. I sold some, but they just weren't doing great. So it's like, well, why am I, it's like banging your head against a brick wall trying to make something work that's not working. And so I have to kind of just be a little bit objective about it and go, Melissa, I know that you love Jordan, but you need to just stop writing her for a little while and focus on what's working. And there might be a time for Jordan later again.
Absolutely.
You never know.
So it's still a business.
Yeah. It is. You have to be practical. I'm more of a, I'm a bit of a softie. Sometimes I was talking about being objective before about books, but I do Jordan is kind of like a bit of a baby for me. But I am taking her wide. So that's what I'm doing with her this year. So that's my focus, is trying to take Jordan out of KU and put her wide and set up direct sales. So that's kind of, so I feel like I'm still doing a little bit of stuff for her, even though I'm not producing anything new. Melody Sweet, I've just had to let go because I just can't do everything. And Melissa Pearl, I'm trying to take wide as well. But again, just finding the time to do it. It's so time consuming.
It sounds like such a single thing to do, but it's not.
It's not.
Yeah. I think it would be really great to hire one more person. I would love to get a second assistant and just sort of say to them, okay, you just take all my Melissa Pearl stuff and you just take it wide and you set up the ads and you do all of that. Because I know that if you want to grow, you need more people in your team, you know, and Rachel and I, my assistant and I, can only do so much. I mean, she's got other authors that she looks after. I can't keep piling more and more work on her. So But so that I've put that into my dream box. It's like another assistant. I would like another assistant. I don't know how I'm going to find them. I don't know how they're going to come to me, but it's in my dream box. So at some point I'm going to have my backlist assistant who's going to come into my life and get my backlist cranking.
And it's quite a good idea to actually have that in mind of what they would do. Because, you know, often when you get to the stage where you're thinking of an assistant, you think, what actually could I pry out of my hands that, you know, I don't feel some attachment to?
Well, that's the thing. It's about being willing to let it go as well, right?
Yes.
And, and I just feel like it's such a shame to have these books that are just sort of sitting there. And I make a few sales every now and then with them. They're not completely dormant, but they're just not thriving. And I would just love to see my backlist thrive, because I feel like with 80 books, I should have a freaking empire. You know, like I should be bringing in a ton of money every month. And it just seems a bit wrong that my backlist is not doing that for me. But that's because I haven't invested the time or the energy or the money into it. So I just keep doing new pen names.
Yeah.
Obviously, like bright, shiny new things.
Scattered yourself a bit thin there in the background.
Actually, when I did the have you guys done the Clifton Street?
Some of us have. Some of us
have. Stop.
We're just gonna start rocking any moment.
When I did that, I think one of my top five was the one about being a developer.
Makes sense.
I'm obviously very good at getting things from nothing kind of off the ground and churning.
Yeah.
But I'm not very good at like taking it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's where I need to bring someone into my team who's like
strategic
and go, okay, this is how we get you to the next level. And I don't know how to find that person. Because I think a lot of PAs or VAs are very good at you telling them exactly what they need to do and they will do that thing.
Mm.
I need someone who's going to say, Melissa, this is what we need to do. This is what I think is going to be really useful for you.
Mm.
So it's just hard to find someone like that. I don't even know how, but the request has gone out to the universe. So we'll see what happens.
Awesome.
Very
cool. Okay. So I think we're kind of rocked up to almost an hour here. So I think we need to wind up the interview. I mean, I'm sure we could go on for hours here. Like there's so many things to talk about and so many different things that you've done. Quickly, is there anything else that's really, really important that you think has been part of this process that you need to mention to our listeners?
Name. I just think that if you want to start a pen name, you just need to do your research and you need to really figure out who the pen name is catering to and what they're looking for, and then just really embrace that. Do you know what I mean? So just do your homework. Do your homework, figure out what's going to make them tick and get them excited, and then just embrace that and do that thing, because I think that's really helpful. And it is a lot of work. It's a lot of work to set up a pen name, but obviously that kind of thing excites me and works for me.
Yeah.
Who knows? I surely hope there's not a six pen name in my future, but maybe that's my thing. Maybe. Mm. I'm the kind of author that does a pen name for 5 years and then does another pen name for 5 years. And then like, maybe I just need to accept that about myself, that that's part of who I am. Maybe I'm not the person who has the same pen name for 20 years. I don't know. I don't know that about me yet. But
multiple personalities, you'd be like.
Yeah.
Sounds like.
But for now, Katie's rocking my world for now.
Katie.
And I think part of the thing with Katie is that you are excited about the stories. It's not you've done the research, you've done everything else, but you're also excited to be here. You're excited to write them. You're excited to do the newsletter. You're talking in a way that vibes for you. It doesn't feel like a chore, and you're not talking about it like it's a chore. Do you know what I mean? And I think
100%. 100%. And I think it's because I've chosen a genre that I love to read. So I'm coming to these people as a reader as well as a writer, so I can go, oh my gosh, you guys, I read this book and it was so good, and you know, like I feel like I'm relating to them on more of an even level as well. And I've just forgotten the other thought. I had another thought there, but it's that's right, loving the books. I think that's huge. Like I have read these books for fun. Like usually I write it, edit it, send it to my editor, edit it, send it to my proofreader, just do those changes and off it goes. But with Forbidden Freshman, I wrote it, sent it to my editor, and then I read it again, And then I sent it to my proofreader and I read it again because I was like, oh, I want to read it again, you know. And I think I read it like another time just for funsies. So that shows how much I'm loving these characters, that I'm making the time to read the books multiple times.
Yeah.
And I just want to hang out in their world. Like, I just love them and I want to be with them. And I think that comes through when you're advertising it and when you're talking about it, because you have so much joy and passion for your characters and for the stories that the readers kind of pick up on that vibe as well. And they're like, oh, I want to be a part of this, you know?
Yeah.
I think
that helps.
Exactly.
Love that.
Cool. It's awesome. Thank you so much, Melissa, for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honoured to be here. Like, I really love you guys. You are amazing.
Thank you.
What you've done for the self-publishing community is awesome, and it's such an honour to even be asked. Honestly, I've been wanting to come on, be on a guest on the show for so long. So thank you so much for asking me.
We loved having you.
It's been awesome. Thank you very much. Now, if people want to find out more about you, where do they go?
So, yeah, so if you like sweet books, sweet romance, if that's your jam, or you want to find out more about that, then it's foreverlovepublishing.com. But then my steamy stuff, which I've kept separate from my sweet because I don't want to offend any of my sweet readers. So katiearcher.com is my Katie Archer stuff, and it's quite separate to all my other stuff. I've kind of run it really – I use a different website. Everything's very different. So, if they want to find out about my pen names. And then I'm always happy to answer any questions from writers. So if any writers ever want to email me and ask about pen names, they're more than welcome. My details are on my websites. So,
awesome. Perfect. Thank you so much. And Shah, where can we be found?
We can be found at spargirlspodcast.com. We are on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, we would love it if you could subscribe and hit the like button as well, just to help those algos that we all seem to live our lives by these days. Willingly and unwillingly.
Yeah.
And we're on Patreon at Spargirls Podcast if you'd like to come along and join in our community.
That's awesome. Brilliant. Thank you all.
Wonderful.
For joining us for another week with the Spargirls. We'll see you again next time. But for now,
bye.
Bye.